Picture the scene. A new battery project gets built, it's on site, the containers are there, the cells are installed, and then it doesn't make revenue for 6 months. Not because prices moved, not because the market changed, but because the system didn't integrate cleanly. Control, inverters, grid requirements, it all matters. By the time it's live, a whole revenue window has gone. That's the kind of problem this episode is all about. Today's guest is Lucy, Executive Vice President at NOA Energy. Her team design, deliver, and operate battery systems around the world. Not just the hardware, but everything that makes them work. She makes a point that cuts through a lot of the battery hype. A project can lose more money from 1% of downtime than it ever saved by shaving off costs upfront. Because batteries don't earn value by existing, they earn it by being available, by responding correctly, by doing what the grid asks every second they're called on. For Lucy, building the battery is the easy part. Making them work is where projects succeed or fail. This episode isn't about battery chemistry, it's about execution. I'm Ed Porter. Welcome back to Transmission. Hello, Lucy, and welcome to Transmission.
Hi, Ed. Thank you for welcoming me on Transmission Podcast.
My pleasure. And as ever, let's start off with you introducing yourself, but also introducing NOA, the company that you work for.
So I'm Lucy Gagnus-Dujardin. I'm the Global Managing Director of NOA Energy. I've been spending roughly 15 years in the energy sector, more recently on the renewable and batteries activities. So we are a global provider of battery energy storage system. We are delivering our system, our turnkey solution. We include the balance of plant, the HV substation, and we deliver that around the world, been almost 4 gigawatt hours. We're delivering now one of the few non-Chinese suppliers of BNF Tier 1 recorded players. And we are trusted by several players, utilities, IPP like Statkraft, Macquarie, Engie, and many others.
Okay.
And I'm privileged to manage a team that is delivering our what we call our three pillar or a value proposition. The first one is technology, really basically putting together a mix of technology, whether proprietary or third party together, and ensuring we can deliver the right solution for our clients. Then the delivery pillar is basically saying technology is not enough. You need to put things on the ground. You need to deliver it to our client. And then after we follow them on the long term and we service those assets. So simple, but not that easy.
Yeah. Simple in concept, right? But like a little bit harder when you get under the skin of it. Maybe I had two questions from just that first introduction. So yeah. The first one was, you mentioned that you install these assets, right? So you mentioned the HV portions, the high voltage portion, and you also mentioned that you're putting in like your system. If we think about sort of the Lego bricks that are a battery site, so what would you say is like a standard solution for you?
Yeah, a standard solution will include practically on the technology side, the batteries, what we call the DC block that we buy on the shelf and select from a third-party battery OEM. And then after we have a big piece that come at site, already delivered plug and play, that includes the PCS, the PPC, the MV transformer. And mm-hmm. we put on top of this basically the delivery model, meaning mm-hmm. that putting this together once it's not at site and executed, it doesn't work practically. So this is what we do.
Okay, so you're essentially doing everything from the battery up to MV.
And actually, we are delivering more and more HV substation as well. So when I speak by delivery, we mean that basically you need to do the civil work, the installation, and the interconnection. Often, more and more, the system are getting bigger and bigger. They need to include the HV substation. So we've been delivering several HV substation around the world, in Australia, but as well in other countries on our projects.
Okay, so I think that's really helpful for listeners just to get an idea of like where you sit in this process, right? So you're getting everything on site, installed and operating from the battery up to wherever you pass over to the network, whether that's high voltage or HV or medium
Correct.
Voltage MV. Okay, and you also mentioned tier one supplier. What does that mean for people who are sort of outside the space?
What works well is that our clients are happy. If you speak with our client, they will tell you that, yeah, working with NOA was a secured solution for them because we delivered on time, on budget, their project. So this is what is really a good player. being tier one today, everybody referred to it to ensure that there is a right bankability and confidence in the players, because there is a big market coming in with several players. Mm-hmm. So it's more reference for people.
Okay, so it's just a way of like assessing whether people have delivered before, whether they've got a good track record. And right. Obviously Noah has that, as well as others in the market. But like, I think it's important to say. Okay, very good. So let's move on to the market side, because a lot has changed, and it also varies country to country. So in markets like the UK and continental Europe, how are the use cases for batteries changing?
So I think when everything started, players starting to look at single revenues for their projects. Now it's clearly a question of adaptability and stackability mm-hmm. of revenues. If we take a step back on the UK specifically, we remember in 2016, it was really the first frequency response program that was generalized in Europe and allowed to create the bankability and mm-hmm. the revenue visibility for players to invest. But rapidly, there were other revenue streams coming in. Yeah. And we've seen actually also batteries being able to play in the capacity market. And then we are seeing now the LDES. So revenue streams are always changing. Mm-hmm. And it's unrealistic to believe that we will build a battery and it will operate for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Today, we have been asked to deliver a system that should hold for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's unrealistic. We don't know what will happen in 5, 10 years. So it's really mm-hmm. the adaptability need. And we've seen this as well in Italy. In Italy, it was clearly a bit a late situation compared to the UK. We've seen the fast reserve auction in 2020, mm-hmm. where actually NOAA delivered roughly one-fourth of the capacity. But we see that the asset that were delivered in this period is now gathering other type of revenues. And we even help some existing clients to upgrade their system mm-hmm. to capture other type of revenues. So it's really a question of adaptability to a more long duration services that we are seeing more and more. Yeah. If you look at Italy, for example, the Maxi scheme is now targeting between 6 and 8 hours. Between the players that have been awarded. So it kind of changed the dynamics. Mm-hmm. You may need to have some augmentation of your battery. You may need to do some upgrade of your control system. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You never get bored, I would say.
You do. That is certainly true for the battery space. You mentioned LDES very quickly. So that's long duration energy storage. So that's I don't want to say it's 6 hours or 8 hours or 10 hours, because that's something of a moving number. I also wanted to just add an extra part to this. So you mentioned that when you install a site, you're thinking about, say, frequency response, or you're thinking about energy trading. Do you start to see things, other power system qualities? So do you start to see things like voltage control or synthetic inertia? So as the group kind of configuring the inverters that are being put onto the site, do you start to think about these types of questions, or do people ask you for that?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think everybody's speaking about grid forming nowadays. It's funny, you know, like maybe 3-5 years ago, no one was speaking about it. And now everybody is doing grid forming. We can speak about it for hours, but this is where we come from, this type of application. So we see more and more batteries as a core mm-hmm. Part of the grid. Mm-hmm. And so it needs actually as much as renewable penetrating mm-hmm. to compensate the need for synchronous. So yes, we are adapting our service. And actually, our power plant controller is working more and more in enabling those services.
And I think this is really interesting, right? So NOAA started with more of a microgrid type structure, right? And when you think about microgrids, you sort of have to be grid forming. If you're the sort of largest component on that network and you're trying to support that particular network, you have to be grid forming because something has to be grid forming. So people who come with that microgrid background have that knowledge around grid forming. And so the way the market is changing, does that feel like it's playing into some of your strengths?
Yeah, you're right. NOAA really grew out of a microgrid. So we deliver a project in places where it was non-negotiable to be reliant. We work in Ireland, in remote communities, mm-hmm. In Tasmania, in very remote areas, you can see. And this is a place where we build our technology platform. So mm-hmm. this is where we build our power plant controller, PCS capabilities, and develop those grid forming capabilities. So really the functionalities that we are seeing today, as requested by the grid, but we also work on hybridization. Mm-hmm. So at that time, most of the projects were hybrid. For example, if we take a project we had in Lifu, a small island that was basically to run on solar, wind, biofuel, and batteries. At that time, most of the business model, I would say 10 years ago, was displacing diesel generator. Mm-hmm. And this is a big lesson learned that is enabling us today, now that battery price fell down, penetration of renewable brought some more needs of, grid services similar to what we're seeing in microgrid. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, NHOA transferred its business to utility scale application. But each time we deliver a utility scale project, more and more we are being asked similar functionalities than what we were seeing in a microgrid. If we look at renewables, analysts are expecting that by 2030, we'll see mainly hybrid system coming online for new capacities. Uh-huh. And if you look at behind the meter application, CNI, it's all the same complexity of capabilities we've been developing at that time. So yeah, definitely when people speak about grid forming, as we were saying, we know what the market needs and what it means to make it happen.
I totally agree with you in terms of that direction of travel. When you were mentioning hybrid solutions coming through, did you mean sort of hybrid in terms of like solar and storage? Is that what you...
Yeah, correct. Okay. Yeah, hybridization of solar or wind plants. If you look at Australia, where we are very active as well, most of the project we are seeing being kicking off for 2026 will be... probably 50% hybrid. Mm-hmm. And we believe that with the penetration of renewable, even in Europe, we'll see more and more hybridization needs simply because of curtailment. So it's really a purely economical strategy at one point.
Yeah, I think it makes these kind of, the two elements are really interesting. I think the hybridization, so putting solar and storage together, feels like a really obvious way to try and get more out of the transmission network, which when we look at grids like Europe, we're seeing sort of really big cannibalization of, say, solar revenues and capture rates potentially getting down to, say, 30%. So, you get paid a fraction of what you were expecting to get paid. And then you say, well, look, let's add batteries to the system to try and alleviate some of this. And they say, well, sorry, we can't add batteries because we can't get connections. And you go, well, look, you've already got a connection. And so can we think about ways of hybridizing to solve some of this faster without having to build all of this network from fresh? And I think some of that thinking that would probably be quite obvious in a microgrid scenario maybe needs to start coming through to some of these much larger grids.
I think a lot of companies now who have developed a big pipeline of solar mainly are looking at this business model. Mm-hmm. Even in Europe, it started in other countries, I would say outside of Europe. But now a lot of players and a lot of IPPs are looking at hybridization of their system. So mm-hmm. I would say if we looked at it 2 years ago, we clearly understood that regulation was around of stating we would develop the generation mm-hmm. on one side and we would develop the flexibility and security on the other side, mm-hmm. Managed separately, stating that generation and the need for flexibility mm-hmm. may not be at the same point, okay, on the network. Now it's changing a bit, the approach. And I think this is mainly driven by the price of battery falling down.
Definitely.
If you look at economics, it starts to make sense today.
It's often called like the domino effect, right?
Exactly.
So as costs fall, the sort of batteries keep on finding their way into more and more markets where at higher prices it wouldn't have worked, but at lower prices it's obvious that you can put batteries in there. Yeah. And so when you start to see batteries do things like voltage control or synthetic inertia, or maybe you're retrofitting a site, those sort of new services or new installations, what has NHOA learned about bringing some of those batteries online? How do you do this really well?
I believe the market is very focused on batteries. Mm-hmm. We speak batteries, but batteries is not only a battery. If you look at the batteries energy system as a body, maybe the batteries are just the leg, I would say. If we speak about the best anatomy, maybe a weird way to look at it. But then after, you have, of course, all the PCS, the transformer, that's really mainly the core of your body that is converting all this energy. And then you have really the brain. And the brain is your power plant controller to ensure that all the system is working well together. So while I believe many people have been looking at batteries as a big chunk of the capex. Naturally, it often underestimates the impact of other elements in this entire system and in this entire model. If you look at the power plant controller, it may represent 1% on the total capex, but it delays insanely commissioning. It creates large underperformance of several players of the market. So at NHOA, we really try to enable our partners in choosing the best batteries that exist on the market and providing them a solution, very plug and play, easy, that we will support them to deliver at site and to operate. And this solution, we call it the Nexus, practically. So it's a bit our big marketing word, where we bring together the PCS, the power plant controller, the transformer, and they will work together and enable basically to select the best batteries to connect together and to perform the right services that you want on your system. I think if you look at it today, the necessity and the complexity of our system compared to it was before, it really bring additional difficulties and complexity while delivery system and operating it, and need expertise on this segment.
Okay, and you mentioned PCS quite a few times, and I think just for fullness, we should say that that's the inverter.
That's the inverter.
That people sort of may use different languages, right?
Correct.
And I think what's really interesting about what you've said is that sometimes you might have some OEMs or EPCs that or installers of these big projects, if I use more sort of simple language, who have found that when they installed this system in country X, it was fine and it worked. But now they're being asked to install it in a new country, and there's new legislation, new rules, new grid codes. And so even though their thing works, their PCS or their controller works, it's not compatible with the sort of the local rules of that particular grid or network. Do you see that happening quite often?
Yeah, it does. Actually, if you look at the market, it's really a standardization of products that we see nowadays. And the expectation that one solution could work in one market while the other one would not. Actually, there is a lot of engineering work behind it to make it work and to be compliant for specific grid codes, specific requirement functionalities. I know our team is spending quite extensive time to do so and to be compliant. We can take example of the Stability Pathfinder, for example, in Scotland, closer to us, which is very complex system to make it work together. We can speak about Australia, where there is a commissioning process that is super extensive and demanding, I would say, that require really the understanding and showing that you will deliver what you were asked to perform in details. Mm. So it's not the same, really. And if we speak to our engineers at NHOA, someone who have been working in a project in the UK may not have the skill set yet to work in Australia. So there is really a transfer of knowledge that needs to be earned each time. So everybody say when you enter Australia, for example, you will fail once and then after you may make it work.
Yeah,
we've been lucky. We haven't been failing. It hasn't been easy, however. Yeah. But I think everybody is experiencing it when they move from an American market to a European market or to an Australian market each time to change.
And I think that's a kind of critical thing, right? So when people are looking to deploy those projects, finding someone who has done some of it before or has a concept of how different each market is a really important piece. Yeah. Maybe let's then ask that question more directly. So how would you say, if you were trying to kind of compare NHOA to other EPCs, but also people who would install on site, but also people who would create equipment, for example, the inverter that we've been talking about, how would you say NHOA is different to some of the other major integrators?
Yeah, so we don't define ourselves as integrator or OEM. We really are fundamentally a delivery and service company that can provide, thanks to our background of engineering, the system to run and operate for several years. Most of integrators went to a trend of productivizing their batteries, while on our side, I think we have three differentiating points. First, we love making things happen. So meaning that we love to build stuff. So delivering is really a model for us. I think a lot of people are underestimating the challenge of delivering. But today, if you look at all the projects, if you speak with many people, the issues they've been facing are rarely on the DC block of the battery itself, but in putting things down on time, on budget, without issues. And this is a big coordination work that people need to invest on. And at NHOA, we love doing this. And we have been structuring the company to deliver on turnkey those business. Then after, the second thing is, we love operating our site. A lot of people see it as a pain point, you know, to stay on the long term, seeing as little money to be made, a lot of people to manage, because you need people to manage your site, while we see it as a big value, because this is where we create the real trust on the long term with client. We get repeat business. A lot of our clients today are clients with who we've been delivering already one, two, three projects. So this is something that works well. And finally, we love people. We believe that our business is impossible without people. We grew our organization, especially since the last year, extensively, globally, and we worked a lot on the organization itself, how it can perform well, and the human capital element of it. I like to refer to the CEO of NVIDIA, because it's very trendy, of him saying that we will need 1,000, probably more, of electricians. And it's true, we need to find those people, but those people are not easy to find. So how do we attract them? How do you train them? How do you retain them? It's really the challenge to them. So at NHOA, what we've done is we have a big part of the training chunk. So we are welcoming every year a graduate program. So this is really the fresh graduate people. To the listener, don't hesitate to apply for the next one, where we welcome engineers, and they are being trained across different team in our organization to be able to have the overall view of our business of delivering batteries. And however, we continue to train them on as it goes. Our business is changing so much that you need some training, not only on engineering technical ground, but also on the project management. Then after, we are true believer in curiosity, accountability, ownership of people, so they can grow themselves. And this is something that has been working well. So while people think that delivery is super complex, servicing is boring and takes time, they see people as a cost to reduce. At NHOA, we really invest on this ground, and this is where we believe we are different compared to some of our peers on the market.
Okay. And I think if you, to try and put some sort of numbers and context on this, right? So if you're sort of sat outside the battery world and you go, oh, look, well, why haven't we installed 10 gigawatts in this location this year, or whatever, 20 gigawatts in all of the US, like whatever that number may be, we track those numbers. And nearly always we are about 25% behind what we should be installing in any particular year. There's nearly always 1 or 2 gigawatts that are behind the installation date. And the reality is that those things that you're talking about, those thorny rules, those thorny configurations, the testing, the relationships that you may need to hold with a network operator, all of those things mean that if you don't have the right people who have the right context and the right training, your project will get behind time. And you will lose money for that, because you're going to be coming on 6 months, 9 months later than you should have been. Look, the data definitely shows that this is a really big issue, and perhaps one that's underestimated.
Quick break. If you listen to this show, then you probably work in energy. And at Modo Energy, we're not just talking about the energy transition. We help our users to actually make it happen. All energy storage, solar, and wind assets on the global balance sheet need to be valued and benchmarked. And that's where Modo Energy comes in. Our benchmarks and forecasts are transparent, bankable, and trusted by the world's leading banks, asset managers, utilities, and developers. So if you want to learn more, go to modoenergy.com. And if you want more content like this, sign up to our weekly dispatch newsletter. Enjoy the conversation.
Now, going from the very sort of detailed side of grid integration to the massive side of supply chain, obviously, countries like China own a lot of the supply chain for battery manufacturing, and also for solar as well. How do you sort of work alongside China in order to make sure that your customers are getting the best products?
Today, our model, as I explained you, is really selecting the best batteries on the market and enabling them by putting maybe more the brain and the core of the system together with those batteries. We have very good relationship with different battery OEM, and we continue overlooking at the progress and the evolution of the market. It's really a question of testing, assessing what are the right players, what we consider as tier one players that we can rely on, and we can rely on the long term as well for guaranteeing us the performance that we are working on. I see a very big discussion at the moment in terms of supply chain management, especially through the geopolitical aspect that has been, let's say, in light by the US evolution in the last months. In Europe, I think what we are seeing today is there is a good mix between the approach of doing a mix of batteries coming from China or enabling the production of batteries in Europe. If you look at the latest FEDER, Spanish auction, or not auction, but subsidies mechanism, they are valuing basically production made in Europe, but at the same time valuing what is done outside of Europe and doing kind of a mechanism of counting down the subsidies according to this that could enable a balanced scheme.
Yeah.
If we speak about investing into batteries, manufacturing in Europe, it's clearly something that we've seen in the past month. It has been difficult for Europe to catch up, and there's a lot of more investment from China in Europe to enable this evolution when needed for local content. However, as I say, battery is not only about batteries. Battery system is about a full wider technology stream. We see inverters that have been manufactured, developed since several years in Europe with very well established manufacturer in Europe. I don't see why we should not enable this already manufacturing ground in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Definitely expect to see some of those big names, big brands looking to have manufacturing bases in Europe. I think that's very likely to happen. I think I really like your approach, which is to say, look, there are some really core components like the DC block that we're very happy to go and get from whoever we think is the sort of best provider of that, looking across the competency of the equipment and also the cost of it and the deliverability and their sort of status as like a tier one manufacturer of that. So we can go back to them and we can say, hey, look, this wasn't good enough, and you'll be able to get another one or get your money back, however it might be. And then you're saying, well, look, we can then do some of the software, some of the how this system thinks. To your analogy, the brain of the thing that you're going to install, you own and you would put into the particular site. And I think that's a really kind of nice way to think about how you would work with someone as sort of dominant in the supply chain as Chinese manufacturers of battery systems. Have I kind of...
Yeah, partnership approach and how to make the best out of it, I would say.
Okay, I think that's a really nice way to think about it. So to then go on to the future, so to ask a question around where do you see the most rapid technological progress? So do you see it in sort of the cell technology? So that would be part of the DC block that you were talking about earlier. What sometimes people call a BOP, which is the balance of plant. So that's the stuff that's around the DC block. System integration, so a lot of the work that you specialize in. Or is it all about software? Is it just going to be we've got millions or billions more data points and we're just going to be making so many better decisions with essentially the same DC block? Which of those do you kind of see moving fastest?
Yeah, the fastest still remain, I think, on the cell part. We've seen an increase in ampere hour and energy density of the cells in the past months, year. We thought for a moment there would be a stabilization at 280 ampere hours. But then rapidly, there has been an acceleration. We've seen announcement at 314, then after now well beyond 500 ampere hour cells. I believe it's a challenge, you know, for developers, owners, EPCs to integrate and to keep the pace. So this is really something at NHOA we try to keep pace on. And it's a work that requires a lot of collaboration. We're speaking about collaboration with battery OEM, and this is really what we try to do, because we see this evolution going very fast. And if we need to be on time on the market to deliver the best product and the best solution to our partners on time, we need to be flexible and adaptable. So how do we do it?
Maybe just to people may not think in amp hours too often. So maybe just to kind of give people a concept of like, what's the difference between like a 280 amp hour and a 1000 amp hour cell?
Yeah, it's really the density of the cell itself. So basically in the same container, you will have more energy. So what is very important for people today is, as we see longer duration of the system, there is an objective to densier the system itself. So on the same plot of land, you will be able to have more of it. So it's that much important for players today.
And that can mean sort of easier connection for that system, right? So if you can get more energy into a single cell, then you're sort of linking up fewer components, right?
Of course.
And so the sort of system integration becomes a little bit cheaper when you're going from sort of cells to the DC block.
Yeah, and even at sales level, the densier of it make it cheaper in the product itself, less connection, and also in this, let's say, rush for competitiveness that we've seen mainly between battery OEM, we've seen indeed the need to get those numbers ramping up rapidly. Mm-hmm. What it means, however, it means that how reliable it is, how much we can guarantee performance on the long run with such a fast change, it's a big question. So on our side, we take a lot of time. You know, as I like to say, we don't sell data sheet. We say something that works for real. So we test different solutions. We have a lot of discussion with battery OEM. We visit their laboratory. We visit their research center. Look at the prototype. We order samples that we test in Cosio in Italy, in our testing facility where we have several battery line of tests. And then after, we are able only to deliver it. So it takes a bit of time. So if you don't have those deep connection and relationship, it's easy to lose the pace, as I was speaking.
And this
about
is the language of someone who has built these projects before, has had to look at projects that have, for whatever reason, not been delivered on time or have gone wrong. And yeah, so there's this kind of, I think what I'm getting is a message around making sure that you're working with the right counterparty so that when you do deliver something, it is fit for purpose. You don't fall behind time. You don't have a lack of availability, because yes, you can squeeze an extra 5 or 10% out of your CapEx, but that's not that helpful if you lose 10% of availability per year, or your OpEx is significantly higher because you're having to make many more replacements because the kit you've sort of bought isn't the right thing.
Definitely. We are doing a lot of sensitivity analysis of the IRR, so really the return, what money you will make with your asset, with our partners. And we see that like even just small delays of the project can make you lose insane amount of money, or just underperformance. You were speaking about availability. So how often you have a downtime of your system. And this has a huge impact. We discussed with some client, 1% of availability can impact potentially much more on CapEx upfront. So there is a good equilibrium in making work together, this equation. And at NOAA, we have like, on all our overall fleet, we have been delivering in the last months more than 99% availability. Mm-hmm. And I think there are not many people who are able to say so, but I think it's really the combination of technology, delivery, and service that really allow together to have such a performance.
It's this fascinating part, right, where people think that battery manufacturing is very much sort of comes out of a long supply chain, goes on site, plug it in, off you go. In reality, there is a lot around the sort of optimization of that system, duration, availability, the spare capacity that sits within it. How do you comply with the rules of the particular location? There is so much more that comes to light as you get deeper into the business case.
I think it comes from the solar industry. You know, I come myself from the renewable industry and mainly on solar side, and solar was easy. Battery is fun. Battery is much more complex. When you transfer from solar industry to battery industry, you realize how much the complexity is bigger in terms of technology itself, evolution of the technology, of course, but also in terms of revenue stream you can capture out of it. And a lot of people are actually very fascinating. And this is why everybody in the industry, I think, is having so much fun.
There we go. Solar is easy. Batteries are fun. I will borrow that, I'm sure. Okay, let me move on to final two questions. So is there anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, I think I spoke about it. So we have been growing. We are structuring our company, we are always looking for talents to join us. We put a lot of effort in growing people internally, but we also plug in people and expertise. So if you have expertise in engineering, high voltage, balance of plant, overall expertise in control or anything else, please look at our website.
Yeah,
we have some job offers open.
And is that globally or is it sort of mostly?
Yeah, it's globally. We have four hubs. So one in the US, one in Europe, one in Asia and one in Australia. So we have offices all around the world. And our team are happy also to be able to travel around the world, not only for delivering project, but for doing their life in other countries. So it's nice.
There we go. Have fun with batteries and travel around the world. It's a good pitch. Okay. And then I'll come to you. Is there a contrarian view that you hold?
Yeah, I think I've been already underlying several contrarian views saying that don't look only at the battery, look at the overall system that can work and that can impact overall your performance. But I would like to return the question to you, Ed. And as you've been interviewing many people on this podcast, I'm interested to see from you, what are the player experiencing as pain point today? Because we like to solve pain points. So I'd like to hear from you.
What are the pain points that people find in the market today? I would say often it's revenue, right? So you have this kind of the revenue forecast that look to see how the world will develop. And it's sort of, okay, you may see 70, 80 pounds, whatever it is. And then actually delivering against that revenue, I think that can be underestimated. So for example, in the UK, and we talked about it in this conversation already, that people get obsessed with the connections queue and this rush to get stuff connected. Well, the reality is that once you get it connected, is it actually going to make the money that you thought it would? And so I would, I mean, always we think about revenue forecasts a lot. And so I would always say, you know, making sure you've really thought through the sort of sustainability of your business case, what your battery is going to be doing. I would say that's one of the really big pain points. It's maybe not a contrarian view as such, but it's certainly something that people think about. I would say maybe some of the pain points that people will have this year that I'm really excited about would be things like batteries just going beyond just the frequency response and just the wholesale trading. So I think people will try and use their battery brain a little bit more, to borrow your analogy. So thinking about things like doing voltage control or synthetic inertia, or could they do smart things alongside solar with co-location to make the most out of grid connection points they have. I think some of those things will come through this year. I hope they will. I'm not just talking about GB here. I'm talking about Europe and US as well as Australia. Australia, for example, we see 50% of batteries going in with grid forming inverters now. I think they're very sort of front running in this. So those are some of the pain points I think I see.
Exciting. I think it's a good topic to be tackled for 2026 and even beyond.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So there's loads in there. I also hear a lot of contrarian views. Oh. So I'll give you two of my favorites, okay, just as a wrap up. One, we had Nat Bullard on a long time ago who said that he thought the last 5% of the energy transition might be quicker than the first 95%, which I think about quite a lot, and I still don't know whether I think it's right or not, but I like it. And we also had Bex Sherwood from.
I think it's challenging because we were discussing a bit of the record before the podcast about how to actually electrify some CNI business and how specific to each of the business case and each of the players
exactly.
So the industrial process to make happen. I think usually 95% is easier, but interesting to discuss and to debate.
Exactly, but then I think where it should get due credit is that some of the things that we rely upon today, like the availability of gas or the availability of diesel, may not be so easy. So let's say we're talking about 2050, 2060. Like, can you actually get just a very straightforward diesel solution if you've kind of always worked in that way? Actually, would it just be easier to have a slightly less efficient, let's say, battery and solar system versus, say, a diesel in a world where diesel's not as commonplace as it is today? So that's a bit of a thinker. It's always stayed
it
with
is.
Me. We had Bex Sherwood on recently from Field, who talked about that the industry sometimes takes for granted that we need to do things that are good for the climate and things that are good for, and I'm sort of slightly changing her words a little bit, but I think this is kind of where it comes from, that we take it for granted that people are on board with just doing things that are good for the climate. And in reality, we need to take a lot more responsibility for helping people to come along the way to understand that it's sort of good for economics, good for their local environment, but also kind of hearing them when they say, that's quite a big change for this particular part of the world. And I think as the industry, if we don't talk about what we're doing in terms of it being good for economics, good for the climate, that type of thing, like there is a gap that gets left, and that gap gets filled with Russian bot from, you know, on Twitter or X or whatever it is that will now say something, and that's probably being totally dismissive of the argument, and that's exactly what Bex is talking about. So I've fallen right there into the same trap. But there are things like that where I think we need to do so much more. And so I really like those two, and they've kind of stuck
I agree
with it.
And I think on the coming from the renewable industry in the past, I think there has been one thing that has been a bit overlooked is how we onboard everybody. And it's not because you are providing renewable energy that people will be already on board. And it was very conflicting against other technology as well, seeing renewable as the only solution, while it's actually a mix that you have and you have to onboard the entire industry to change. And this impacts people's life as well on a day-to-day basis. So I agree, it's not an easy one to align and to align planets for everybody.
So there we go, a fun wrap up. And Lucy, just to say thank you very much for coming on Transmission. You've been a wonderful guest, and we wish you the best of luck in 2026 and all your endeavors.
Thank you very much, Ed, for having us.